Good morning again. So this talk is about a small project in which we explored how to make it easier to build Ajax-driven web applications. And that led us sort of on a trail through a kind of a good news, bad news story. I'll summarize it very quickly in this slide, and then I'll go over each of the individual details in more detail in the subsequent slides. So the basic good news is that Ajax allows you to build some really exciting user interfaces, but the bad news with that is that if implemented in the most obvious way, it tends to produce spaghetti applications. It intertwines the code in some fairly unpleasant ways. So the good news is potentially we can eliminate that problem by encapsulating these Ajax-driven interactions inside components. That would be the goal, that hide all the complexity of the Ajax interactions. But the bad news with that is that once you start using components, it introduces some funky state problems about how do we make information available to those components that spans multiple web requests. Typically, you know, web servers run stateless, where no information persists from one request to the next. And trying to do components requires you to maintain more state than you'd have to otherwise. So then the next piece of good news is that there's a bunch of ways you can solve that, and we explored two of them, one of which involved passing the state to the client and then returning that back to the server later on when processing requests. We call that reminders. And then we also explored a second approach called page properties, where we store the state on the server. So the good news is it's possible to solve that, but the next piece of bad news is that each of these approaches has its own set of problems. The client-side approach has some fairly complex security problems, and the server-side approach has some garbage collection problems. So, and unfortunately, the story sort of ends there in that there's no perfect solution to all of these problems. Our conclusion after all of this is that we think the server-side approach is probably the better of the two. So in the rest of the talk, I'm going to go through so the background, a little bit of background on Ajax, why trying to componentize Ajax leads to state problems, and then the implications of these two different approaches to solving the problems. So basics about Ajax, I suspect most of you already know this, but in the absence of Ajax, the only way a browser can interact with a server is to request a completely new page which replaces everything you see on the screen. And you know that was sufficient in the early days of the web, but doesn't really allow you to do very nice interactive applications. So the neat thing about Ajax is that once you have loaded a page, you can make Ajax requests, which are simply HTTP requests issued under the control of JavaScript running in the browser. So you can issue requests to a server to fetch additional information in a very granular way and update the page incrementally without having to replace its entire contents. And the cool thing about that is that it enables a large class of really rich user interactions where you can make fine-grained updates to pages without having to refresh the whole page. You know, the poster child for Ajax probably was Google Maps. It came out in the mid-2000s. It really exposed people to the potential of that. But we're seeing it in lots of other areas, such as autocomplete boxes. And as Adam DeBoer mentioned, Gmail uses Ajax in a zillion ways to manage your mail for you and so on. So Ajax is really great from the standpoint of users and the kinds of user interactions that it allows. Unfortunately, Ajax not so great from the standpoint of developers trying to build applications. It tends to intertwine the pieces of an application in some fairly unpleasant ways. And so to illustrate this, let me take just a sample application that's written using the MVC, Model View Controller, paradigm, which is supported by most of the major development frameworks. And for this, I'm assuming a server-centric style of application development. So applications are designed as a bunch of code that runs on the server and generates HTML and JavaScript, which is then downloaded to the browser. So in the model view controller style, applications tend to be divided into three kinds of things. There are models, which manage the application's data, typically one class for each particular kind of data in the application. And then there are views, which manage the rendering of HTML for the browser. And the views correspond to different, either entire pages in the simple case, or pieces of pages that get rendered in the browser. And then the third component are controllers, which act as the glue between the models and the views and incoming HTTP requests. So when a request arrives at the server, typically what happens is that it's dispatched to a method in a controller based on the URL in the request. And then the controller fetches whatever data is needed to service that request by invoking model classes. And then it invokes one or more views to render the HTML for the page. Okay, so that's the paradigm that would be used for simple pages without AJAX. Now, when AJAX gets added, the most obvious way to add AJAX is that you use the same paradigm where each AJAX request arrives at the server. It gets dispatched to a controller class, typically a different method. Typically, one controller will handle a collection of related pages and all of the requests associated with them. So the AJAX request for a particular page would probably go to the same controller that generated the original page, a different method, same controller. That method then fetches whatever data is needed to service that AJAX request, invokes other views to render the results of the AJAX, and the result gets returned back to the browser. So that's the sort of the canonical, obvious way of doing AJAX requests in an application. The problem with this is that it tends to expose the controller to all of the details of every AJAX request. That is, if you add a new AJAX request, then you need a new entry point in the controller to pass that through to the views. And if you have a view that, say, knows how to display some kind of HTML, and you modify that view to now include AJAX interactions, now you have to modify every controller using that view to pass through, handle the appropriate requests coming in, and pass them through to the appropriate view. So the result is this does not scale very well as pages get more and more complex, and it makes it hard to encapsulate interesting sort of, paradigms inside the views because the controllers have to know about all the AJAX requests. So the bottom line is that doing this in the simple, obvious way tends to spaghettiize your web applications. So how do we solve that? Well, what we'd like to do, ideally, is to somehow be able to encapsulate these interesting styles of interaction inside reusable components. I can write my component once, use it in many different pages, it completely handles all of the AJAX. Ideally, controllers should not need to be aware that a component uses AJAX. If I have something I want to display on my page, I ask for that thing to be displayed, and it handles whatever AJAX it needs in order to do its business. So we've been working on techniques for doing this as part of FIZ, which I mentioned briefly yesterday afternoon. It's a component-based framework. And I'll give you an example from that and then use that to explore the implications of this. So, for example, suppose you wanted to create a component that displayed hierarchical trees, like on the right side of the chart there. So what we'd like is for the component to manage as much as possible of this so that it can be used to display a variety of trees for different purposes in different pages or different applications. So ideally, the component should handle all the details of rendering HTML for this tree. It should automatically include JavaScript in the HTML that it renders, so the JavaScript can handle events such as a user clicking on the plus or minus buttons to expand nodes. We'd like this component to work for trees that are quite large, and so we don't want to have to download the entire tree to the web page when we initially render the page. Instead, we can just download the top level of the tree, and then as users click on the plus buttons, then we can expand nodes by issuing AJAX requests back to the server to fetch the contents of those nodes and display those. Ideally, we'd like the component to handle all of that. So it would have the JavaScript on the browser that would issue the AJAX requests, and it would have the code on the server that would handle those requests, fetch the new contents of the expanded node, and return that back to the browser. Now, in order to make all of this reusable, though, we'd like this component not to be hardwired for a particular kind of data. You'd like it to be usable for different sorts of data for different purposes. And so ideally, what it should do is the component should handle all of the interactions with the browser, but the source of the data should be external. And so the component should actually invoke some external data source to fetch the data. In this case, the data source is think of it as a directory listing program that shows the contents of directories. But you can imagine many other kinds of things you might want to display with a tree. So those are the things the tree component manages. Then in order to use it, say in the controller, all I should have to provide is the data source for this. And then ideally, it would be nice if I could customize the formatting to change the icons that are displayed. Or in this particular case, you can see that in displaying nodes, we include the size of each file in addition to the name of the file. So we'd like to be able to customize the display based on what we're displaying in the particular tree. But ideally, in order to use this inside a controller, all I should have to do is something like the line on the bottom. This happens to be a simple Java class, but you don't particularly need to use Java to achieve the same effect. So we create a tree section as part of one page. And in this example, we specify the data source, which is this fs.fileEndure. That's basically a class and method that can expand a directory and return the contents of the directory. And then we also include the name of the top-level node, the root node that will be displayed in the tree. And once I've done that in a controller, I shouldn't have to do anything else. Everything else happens automatically. I don't have to be aware of any AJAX requests at all in the controller. That's completely encapsulated inside this component. So if we do that, now suddenly AJAX becomes easy to use. There's a lot of details are hidden inside the components. It does not infect the controllers with a lot of low-level details. But now let's consider what that does to the application structure in order to do that. So if we go back to the model view controller diagram, what that means is that inside the tree component, I would like to be able to encapsulate both the original page view for this component and any additional HTML that's going to be generated during AJAX requests. And effectively, I need to move a little tiny bit of the controller into that tree component to handle the incoming AJAX requests. I don't want the top-level page controller to have any awareness of that. So then what will happen is that we need to dispatch the AJAX request directly to that component. They don't pass through the controller anymore. Instead, they don't pass through the main controller. They go to the little mini controller inside the tree component. Well, so far, none of this is hard to implement. For example, frameworks typically allow you to control the routing of URLs to particular controllers, and you could set this up in any of the popular frameworks to route those AJAX URLs directly to the tree component. However, there's a problem with managing state information for this object. The issue is that when we initially created this tree during the rendering of the original page, the controller provided various customized information, parameters, to that section, defining how it's going to be used in this particular page. For example, what's the data source to be used for this particular instance of the tree section, and is there custom formatting that needs to be used for this? So the problem is that when we come back later on, in order to handle the AJAX requests, we need that same information. We need to know which data source to use to fetch the contents of the directory, and we need to know about any custom formatting and so on. And the problem is that, of course, in the way web services are typically generated, all that information gets thrown away once the original page is rendered. The servers use a stateless approach where every request is independent. And so if that AJAX request bypasses the controller and goes directly to the component, how does it know that information? So somehow we have to collect that information when the original page is rendered and then save it around somehow and make that available later on during the AJAX request in order to satisfy the request. So that's the basic problem of that this talk is trying to address. How do you preserve state across requests as needed by the server? And we approached this in two different ways that have different trade-offs in terms of the problems that they introduce and the problems they solve. And so I'll go through those each individually. The first approach we use we call reminders, and this is a client-based approach. The idea is to save the state on the client in the browser and then return it with subsequent AJAX requests as part of the request. So we define these objects called reminders. A reminder is just a collection of name-value pairs. You can think of it as something roughly equivalent to a JavaScript object, and it can actually be a hierarchical collection of name-value pairs. And when you're rendering a page, you can define various reminders. For example, the tree section might define one reminder with overall information about the entire tree, and then additional reminders for each node in the tree that is information about that node, such as what's the name of the directory that we're going to have to expand when we expand that node. So while the page is being generated, those reminders are generated, and the FIS framework automatically makes it easy to pass those reminders over to the browser. It does that automatically. And you can also specify when you're generating JavaScript code that will produce AJAX requests, you can say, in this AJAX request, I need the following reminders to be included. So then later on, when the AJAX requests return, subsets of those reminders will be included with the request. So when inside the tree component, I get to define which reminders come back with each kind of AJAX request that I issue to myself. As a result, then, when those AJAX requests arrive, they have this additional state information. The tree component can then extract the data from the reminders and use that to do all of the things it needs in order to update the tree component. And by the way, this is similar in many respects to something called ViewState in ASP.NET. The main difference is that in ASP.NET, all of these reminders are collected together into one big object. All of the state for the page is, in fact, passed forwards and backwards in every request between the browser and the web server. So that's a more monolithic approach, and in ASP.NET that led to various problems with the state becoming too large and eating up too much bandwidth and processing time. So we use a more granular approach in our approach. Okay, so that's the basic approach. Then what are the pluses and minuses of this? It works in the sense that it allows us to do the right kind of encapsulation. We can build these objects that encapsulate Ajax. It's relatively straightforward to use the reminders. It's easy to build a framework that automatically handles the shipment of this state back and forth to the browser. There are two disadvantages, though. The first disadvantage is that there's overhead for moving the state back and forth. So if the reminder data got to be quite large, then that could be expensive. Our experience so far is that these reminders tend to be pretty small. A few small name value pairs, not typically hundreds or thousands of pieces of data. So in practice, at least so far, we haven't found that to be a problem. The bigger problem is the security issues associated with this. These reminders are basically, they represent bits of internal server state. They could be things related to the user interface, things related to the internals of the server, such as the name of this data source. And this stuff is potentially sensitive. And for example, we wouldn't necessarily want clients, evil browsers, to be able to forge this information. For example, we wouldn't want the browser to be able to send back an AJAX request with a different data source than the one we want it to use, because that could potentially allow the browser to, say, explore the server's database and extract information we don't want it to do. And so the first step is we need to protect the integrity of these things. That is, when we send a reminder over to the browser, we need to guarantee that the browser returns exactly what we sent it and not anything different. And you can use message authentication codes for that, MAX. And so, in fact, we do that automatically in Fizz so that browsers can't modify that information. But that isn't enough by itself, because this information could potentially be stuff we don't even want the clients to see. Like I said, it's exposing state of the server. And so just the fact that this goes to the browser could allow an evil browser to extract information about the server and potentially open up other security loopholes in the server. So ultimately, this probably needs encryption for some kinds of reminders so that people on browsers can't actually understand the contents of those. We haven't actually implemented encryption yet, but I think it would be needed if this was to be widely used. But there's additional problems also. The fact that there's lots of little reminders opens up the possibility that an evil client could collect reminders from various pages for various purposes and then mix and match those and forge its own AJAX requests. Just a sort of a silly example, that if I have one page that allows me to delete files or modify them and one that allows me to view files, I could maybe mix a reminder from the view page and send that back as a response to the delete page and thereby delete things I shouldn't be deleting. And the more we used this, the less convinced we became that anybody would be able to understand and predict all of the potential security problems. You know, there are solutions to each of the problems I've mentioned on this slide, but each of them adds complexity or overhead, and we just ended up feeling uncomfortable about this, that it just feels too dangerous to have big chunks of server state going over to the browser. You know, most of it is totally benign, and unfortunately, that would tend to lull developers into thinking that it's all benign, but it would be very difficult for a developer to know which is benign and which needs to be protected. So we don't think this is a very good way to build secure web applications. So that led us to the second approach. The second approach is called page properties, and the idea here is let's keep all of the state on the server. And the way we do this is by storing information in the sessions on the server. So page properties are just name value pairs again, but they happen to be specific to a particular page view. So every time a new page is displayed from scratch, a new page object is created inside the session, which can be used to store properties for that page. And during the rendering of the page, any of the server components can add properties to this object. Then later on, when an AJAX request or a form post or any other kind of follow-up request occurs for this page, those properties are available. The server will find the set of properties for this page and make them available. And by the way, they can be updated and modified by these requests, so the set of page properties can grow and change as a set of AJAX requests manipulates the page. So this is relatively straightforward to do. The only tricky thing is we need to make sure we can find the appropriate properties for the appropriate page when a request comes back. And the way we do that is by associating a unique identifier with each page. That identifier has to be sent over to the browser. And then that identifier is returned back with AJAX requests or form posts and used to look up the appropriate properties inside the session object. Okay, so very similar in terms of how you use it, except the information is all kept on the server instead of in the browser. And this approach has a different set of advantages and disadvantages. First, it also works. It's roughly the same ease of use or complexity for the application. And it eliminates all the security issues, because the only thing sent to the browser is this page ID, and we use a Mac to make sure that can't be forged or modified. All the state's on the server, so no security issues. But there are two problems. The first problem, again, is that this introduces extra overhead in that you have to save all this information in the session. And so there's potentially extra overhead for serializing this stuff and writing it to disk or database and bringing it back in again later on. Again, the properties tend to be relatively small, so we don't believe this will be a major problem. The bigger problem has to do with garbage collection. And the issue is, when can we eventually delete all of these page properties for old pages? And the problem is that there's no obvious time. In fact, there is no time when it is absolutely safe to delete this information. Because a user can hit the back button. They can view a page, go on, look at other pages, and hit the back button and come back to that page at any time, and then invoke AJAX requests, at which point we need to have the state around for that old page. In fact, even worse in browsers today is that you can have multiple tabs open, and so on the same site, and so I can open a page in one tab and then go to a different tab and manipulate dozens or hundreds of pages on that site and then go back to my first tab again. And again, those tabs all share the same session on the server, and so we need to have that old state around. So if we delete information, which we probably need to eventually, then we open up the potential for what we call broken pages. That is, I go back to a page, I issue an AJAX request for that page, and the page properties are no longer present on the server because they were reclaimed. So what we do with that is that we generate an error message to the user that says, they get a little pop-up on the window saying, I'm sorry, the server's page state is out of date. You'll have to refresh this page. And so that's sort of annoying, and in particular, when you refresh the page, you lose any updates that had happened from all those AJAX requests you made previously. And so this is not a good thing, and in order for this to work, we would need to make sure that broken pages did not happen very often at all. So this introduces a question about, well, how much state do we have to keep around in order to make sure that users are happy and we don't have very many broken pages? In order to answer that question, we did a trace-driven simulation using data we collected by monitoring a bunch of Firefox users. So we collected about 200,000 page views worth of data from a few dozen users over a period of a few months, and then used that to drive a simulation. So suppose we keep a certain number of the most recently used pages around in each session. How many broken pages will that result in? And this graph shows the data for that. So this assumes that every page any user references is an AJAX page. So that's a conservative assumption. And then looks at if we kept a certain number of pages. So for example, if we kept 20 of the most recently used pages in each server for each session, we'd end up with about, that's the green line here, for the median user, we'd end up with a 20-length list. We'd end up with about one broken page, roughly every 1,000 page views. And by the way, 1,000 page views corresponds to roughly a week of browsing for a user. So that would be one broken page a week, which to us sort of feels like, I don't know if that's too many or too few, but we don't need to be a lot better than that to probably be good enough in the sense that users have other unpleasant experiences with the web at a higher rate than that, and so therefore we wouldn't be their primary source of misery. So that's a median user, but then if you look at, say, the 90th percentile worst user, which is the blue line, or even worse, the red line, which was the worst user for each LRU list size, you can see things get quite a bit worse. In fact, for the worst user, we'd have to keep more than 100 pages of state for each session in order to get the broken page rate down to an order of one per week. And we were surprised about how bad that was. We thought, surely nobody can be going back through 100 pages with their back button. And the answer is actually, no, they're not going back through 100 pages. It's all about tabs. The people open lots of tabs, using one tab and then switch to another one. So just for fun, we did a simulation where we assumed that we could somehow keep track of tabs, that the browser would provide us with information about which tab each user is using. And this shows, so that the keeping per tab list is now on the right side and the previous data is on the left side there. And if we could keep a separate LRU list per tab, things actually get a lot better. It only takes a very small number of pages per tab to get us down to a very low rate of broken pages. Unfortunately, today's browsers don't provide that information. So that's only a sort of a theoretical experiment right now. So in practice, we think you'd probably need to keep somewhere in the range of probably 50 to 100 pages worth of state in the browser in order to reach an acceptable level of broken pages. By the way, if there's anybody out here that has any influence over the browser people, we actually think that providing information about tabs or windows would be a really useful feature for browsers to provide. Just adding an additional header in each HTTP request that gives a unique identifier for the current tab or window. It'd be really easy to do, and actually would be useful for other purposes. I don't know if you've noticed, but I find many applications break if you open up multiple windows at the same time, because the application, all the information gets mixed into one session on the server, and the different tabs and windows get confused. Okay, so that's the end of the main part of the talk. So just to conclude, I think the overall thing is that managing web application state is sort of a pain, unfortunately. You know, it starts off with the fact that we have the state that's distributed with part of it on the server and part of it on the browser. And then the servers throw away all their state between requests. So if we need something for subsequent requests, we have to go to extra work to keep it around. Then if you layer AJAX in, things get even worse because we end up with more interactions with some shared state between them. And then if we try and simplify the AJAX problem by adding components, we need even more state. That managing modularity requires state to keep track of the parameters for all the different components. So the combination of all these has made the state problem worse and worse. I would say neither of the two approaches we've explored is perfect. You know, the security problems with reminders and the garbage collection problems with the page property. So I don't find either of them a fully satisfactory answer. And if somebody has a better idea, I'd love to hear it. Our take is that of these two, we think the page property approach is probably the better one. Keep the state on the server. We think that you could keep enough state to keep the rate of broken pages down to a manageable level. And then finally, you know, if we had our druthers, we'd love to see browsers add this notion of tab identifiers. It would be a really simple addition that would be, I think, a big help for people writing applications on servers. So with that, I will stop and take your questions. Thank you.
So if you had no problems with bandwidth, could you actually, take all the reminders and put it in one blob and give it off instead of giving an identifier which points to the state on the server? So would that solve the security problems for you?
Just managing all of the state monolithically, so send the whole thing over to the browser and
like what ASP.NET does. Would it remove your security problems with reminders?
It might be okay. I have to tell you, I'm still just nervous, but I'm not sure I could give you a logical reason why I'm nervous. So you have to encrypt it. You have to both encrypt it
and Mac it. So then the server needs to check the Mac on the whole blob and says, okay, nothing has been changed. This is the blob I've given.
There's actually other problems associated with it. For example, if you get more and more complicated applications, so you can imagine situations where there are multiple AJAX requests from the same client coming back to the same server simultaneously, because some will happen in background and some will happen in foreground. So what happens now, each of them has sent this full bit of state back, which the server is going to update and send back to the browser. Now you have potentially concurrent access to two seemingly independent pieces of state on the server, but they end up going back to the same browser. Whereas if you keep the state on the server, the different requests can all be manipulating the shared state on the server and manage that more consistently. So I think what you're saying would probably work for many applications today, but I have this feeling that as applications get more complicated, you're still better off keeping the state on the server.
Okay, thanks.
Hi, Dan Peek, Facebook. So in creating security properties for reminders, it seems like it would be very convenient in some cases to store something like a nonce on the server to ensure freshness on the client. And so then can you view it as a problem like you showed us a list of how long the LREs would have to be in order to support the other solution, the page property solution. But what really might be more cogent or more relevant to server developers or server hosting services would be the size of the information that has to be retained.
Right. Yeah, I wish we had information about that. The problem is we would need to put this in use in a lot more applications than the trivial ones we have built in order to know how big that state is. So, yeah, interesting question. I just don't know the answer.
So going back to your initial motivation of components, so one of the issues with one of the advantages of that is better encapsulation, better programmability, that's great. But a disadvantage is the fact that you're hiding a lot of the underlying machinery. In particular, when it comes to XHR and AJAX, there are interesting possibilities that can emerge. So for instance, there could be multiple XHRs outstanding at the same time, as you mentioned just a minute ago. And there could be race conditions that if you're just looking at the components, well, you don't really see any of that as a possibility. What are your thoughts on that?
I'd say yes, certainly that's a problem in potential and potentially a problem. So what we'd like to do, of course, is to design the components in a way that they're independent. So if there's separate AJAX requests for different components, they would not compete with each other. If they do, then it seems like we have to have state on the server, that those simultaneous requests can use to synchronize themselves and coordinate if they happen concurrently. So like that's the only, I think that's the only solution, that if they really do interact, we have to have all the state in one place where we can manage that interaction.